for the happy hour. Come on, it's time to let go and say what's on your mind. You know you're gonna feel better the minute you let us lift your state of mind.
Good afternoon. Welcome once again to the Drive Time Happy Hour, brought to you by Ford of Ocala, Lincoln of Ocala, where large selection means larger savings. Chip Morris, Mr. PC, Cliffhanger, you guys, so glad to have you along. We're thrilled to have Oleg Athbashian on with us this afternoon. He is a writer and graphic artist from the Ukraine, currently lives in New York City. He's the creator of the peoplescube.com, which is a satirical website where he writes under the name of Red Square. He's author of the recently published book, Shakedown Socialism. And we wanted to get, I had talked about his article the other day about what to ask progressives, and we thought we'd get him on the phone and talk to him. He's a smart guy. Oleg, welcome to the Drive Time Happy Hour.
Hi, Chip.
It's good to have you here, sir. Tell us a little bit about your book, Shakedown Socialism.
Well, where do I begin?
Yes, that would be a good... at the beginning, wherever it is you feel comfortable.
You see, when I came to this country, I was hoping to live among free people in a free country who are appreciative of their constitutional rights and capitalism that has given them all the prosperity. But I then quickly realized that this country is very deeply infected by socialist ideals. The left has permeated all the cultural institutions and the media and education. And so I decided to start writing again, because when I lived in the USSR, I took part in political resistance, joined a dissident group, and I wrote articles and satirical stories, making fun of communist ideas. And I wouldn't believe that here in the United States I would be doing the same thing, also writing satires against communist and socialist ideas. But here I am. Look at the People's Cube, and you'll know what I mean.
Yeah, the peoplescube.com, an excellent website. I actually had linked to the article that you had on Pajamas Media. But so tell us a little bit about Socialism Shakedown. What's the premise of the book?
The premise of the book is the comparison between the trends that happened in the Soviet Union and in the United States. And a big part of it is unionism, because the unions were the ones who helped the communists to come to power in Russia. And now they're doing a similar thing, bringing the socialist forces to power here in the United States. But of course, the parallels are not exactly the same, because these are different countries and different historical periods. So you wouldn't find exactly the same traits. But the main idea, the goal of the so-called economic equality and justice, the redistribution of wealth, is the same. And as I pointed out in my book, it is like an optical illusion that lures people with its promise of getting something for nothing. But it's all illusionism.
What do you think accounts for so many in this country thinking that somehow they are smart enough that they could take the theories and religion of Karl Marx and turn it into a real world that would have any resemblance to what the anti-capitalist writings of Karl Marx were all about?
Oh, they always think that they will do it differently. In every country, they think, okay, they failed in the Soviet Union, in China, in Cuba, but here, in this country, we'll do it better. Especially that America is such a rich country, the richest country, actually, with the highest standard of living. The socialists think that, oh, there is enough wealth to redistribute. It'll last us for our lifetime. They don't think that sometime the time will come when the same problems will appear as they are now in Europe, where all those people in parliamentary democracies voted for all these socialist benefits for the redistribution of existing wealth, and now they are facing this problem that they've run out of other people's money. And now they're rioting in the streets. Now, the American left also would love Americans to start rioting in the streets, just like in Europe, to shake down the system even more.
But and that's what you mean by shakedown, the actual idea of people rioting in the streets for more benefits.
That is only part of it, but the real shakedown is with the unionism when, you know, the goal of today's unions, the original idea of the unions is completely legitimate, you know, collective bargaining, because each worker cannot bargain independently with the employer, but and some other issues like safety, regulations, training, but the government has already taken over a lot of those functions with the help of the union, are buying politicians in order to promote even more of that. So they are, the goal of today's unions is to siphon the nation's wealth into the pockets of their members. And the government, the socialist government that we have today, is playing along and doing a similar thing to on a broader scale. It's exactly the same game. And so they are together in this. But what happened in the USSR, for instance, is that the unions eventually outlived their usefulness. When the communists came to power, unions became inconvenient. They became in competition with the government that owned everything, all the means of production, all the factories. And so the unions were inconvenient. They were subdued and became just little hand puppets for the communists. And the unions themselves were absorbed into a government structure. And the workers were the ones who suffered. So the unions in America today are doing a very bad service to the workers they claim to represent. They actually weaken their position eventually. And after all the benefits and promises of great pensions comes the realization that this is all unsustainable. This isn't going to last. People lose jobs. And now a lot of formerly union members just don't have jobs. Look at Detroit. It used to have a very low unemployment and a great booming economy, but that was a couple of decades ago. Today, Detroit is like Hiroshima, that as if somebody dropped a powerful nuclear bomb on it. But that bomb was called economic equality and justice, and it was dropped by the unionists who are running the city.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Oleg Atbashian, artist, graphic artist, writer, published a book, Socialist Shakedown. And I would ask, are you seeing any signs that America is waking up to this danger? And is there any hope that we can pull ourselves out of the death spiral that it looks like Europe's going through?
Yes, absolutely. I'm so glad that the Tea Party has appeared, and I've participated in quite many of them. And I wrote reports about that and took pictures, and I posted them on the People's Cube and on Pajamas Media. The Tea Party has given me a great hope. I'm continuously surprised how many people there are in America who still believe in individualism, in capitalism, and equal opportunities as opposed to equality of results. And I'm also surprised how many people in this country have fallen for this unrealistic promise of socialism that is totally un-American. And I'm not afraid to use that word.
You had I tend to agree with you. I'm big on the concept of individualism. I think that that's one of the greatest aspects of America, is that people have the freedom to choose their own direction in life. And unfortunately, that means that some people are going to fail. Although, you know, I don't know anybody who is a wise individual that hasn't made a bunch of mistakes and has wound up learning from them. And when you have a situation where nobody's allowed to fail, you don't engender that kind of wisdom. That being said, I was really intrigued by your column, and I actually have been following your blog, The People's Cube, for quite a long time. I remember many years ago you writing about some of the events in New York City and some of the street theater that that was going on in regards to Communists for Carrie and those kinds of things. But that being said, the column that you wrote about how to deal or how to talk with progressives, to share a little bit of that conversation that you have all the time with what the useful idiots, I guess, is really the best term that you can come up with this. They are useful idiots.
Exactly. They don't realize what they're doing and what forces they are supporting. They just instinctively, you know, the left, they were in the age, or the two women I'm talking about, they were of the age, I can suggest that in the 60s they were probably teenagers. And a lot of teenagers in the 60s grew up with the idea that the system needs to be destroyed, that America is bad, and anything that is anti-American and helps the destruction of this country is good. So they easily fall for any demagogue who proposes a plan to destroy the system without even thinking of what it would lead to and what the basic idea behind it. That's why they support... they don't oppose Islamic terrorists as much as they oppose people like you and me, who are standing on conservative principles that, on which America was founded, the founding fathers. So anyway, I was doing my little book tour in New Orleans and Texas, and at a small Houston bookstore, I was approached by two women who came there not to read the book, not to learn from my experience of working in two countries, the USSR and the USA, and comparing my experiences. They came just to give me a piece of their collective mind. They had seen the flyer with the title of my book, Shakedown Socialism, and it had enraged them so much that they decided to return the following day and harass me. And that made me feel as if I was back in the USSR, because that's where the harassment of people with my opinions was the norm. And, you know, I'm back in the USSR. They were like the two singers, performers, you know, the smaller, pudgier woman was the soloist bully, and this skinnier, older comrade provided backup vocals and noise effects. But their repertoire was, I would say, an eclectic collection of unoriginal talking points, each branded with an almost legible label. NPR, Air America, MSNBC, and so on. And those mental fragments, as I call them, were mismatched in the key and rhythm, and the very existence of harmony seemed an unfamiliar concept to them. So the contradictory points that they were making made me quickly bored, and I decided to at least direct that stream of nonsense in a way, in a pattern that would pit one talking point against each other and make them, you know, cause a mutual annihilation. In my article I mentioned that in the Soviet Union I used to be exposed to harassment by party official, and I heard the real screaming of the party bullies, and this was nothing compared to that. It was like elevator music.
Right.
So I could stand that. Yeah, I had no problem. But it was interesting how I started asking them questions. You know, I remembered this ancient Greek philosopher Socrates, who developed the system of teaching his students not by telling them what he thinks, but by asking them questions that would lead them to the correct answer.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, he debated his opponents, because he wasn't interested as much in the victory over his opponent as in finding out the truth. And so I decided to use his strategy and to just ask simple questions. And those questions made those two ladies foam at the mouth. They would sometimes... they had to go back and retrace their steps and correct their previous statements, or they sometimes would just storm out of the room, just like Whoopi Goldberg and Joe Behar did on The View with Bill O'Reilly. And that was pretty funny. I kept asking. They would return with more talking points, and a new question would be waiting for them that they had to explain. So later, I told that story to a friend of mine who's a talk show host in Philadelphia, and she asked me to remember those questions and write them down. So I decided to make a list of questions, and I added more. They're not exactly Socratic questions, but I created a list of questions that I was asking myself for quite a while of living in America. The absurdities that I encountered with this movement towards socialism and political correctness and environmentalism that has been hijacked by the left. So I put it all together, and it's become quite popular.
No, indeed it is. I thought there were many of them were great questions. We're going to have to take a real quick break, get our folks a traffic update of what's happening here in the heart of Florida. We're talking with Oleg Atbashian, and when we get back from this quick break, we're going to go through some of those questions with him. So if you can hold it right here, go to thesky973.com and check out the column. We put a link up to it on Tuesday. If you miss the rest of this interview, we'll have it up on the podcast. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here on News Talk 97.3 The Sky. Good afternoon. Welcome back. Drive Time Happy Hour 423. That's 424. That's the Hayes Jewelry Time Check. Hayes Jewelry, where the answer is always
yes.
Yes. Chip Morris, Mr. PC, and Oleg Atbashian. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Oleg?
Oh, wait. There we go.
You heard the name Kardashian. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
So this is a similar one.
All right. Very good. Atbashian. And we were talking about the column that you'd written and posted on Pajamas Media. I got a link to it on the Drive Time Happy Hour blog. And talking about questioning the insanity of these liberals and how they have this just bizarre desire to actually embrace communism, socialism. And they have to do all kinds of unbelievable mental gymnastics in order to deal with the reality of the world as it is. And you asked several questions. Let's go through some of those questions.
Right, but first I'd like to read a quote from that story, mm-hmm. Which was, I found a lot of people liked it, and it was reposted on many blogs, mm-hmm. Explaining the working of the liberal mind. Some heads contain an enormous number of facts that never bind with one another to form a fertile soil from which original ideas will grow. Each piece of information exists independently from the others, all of them continuously shifting and rolling around like grains of sand, forming ephemeral dunes in the lifeless deserts of their minds. That is how I see the liberal mind. I can read further, but we're short of time, so let's go to the questions.
Actually, I thought it was a brilliant assessment. I know that as we talk to lefties, and I do even like socially, it's amazing. The minute you knock down one of their fallacies, they simply change the subject. They move on to something else. They say, oh, yeah, well, what about this? And then you talk to them about that for a minute, and then they change the subject to something else.
Right. The open-minded owners, I'll continue reading them. The open-minded owners of such heads like to open their minds in the company of peers and admire each other's fanciful sandy mindscapes. Every new whiff of wind or shaking of the head tosses the sand in more quirky patterns, forming new whimsical outlines, as previously covered facts are exposed and facts once exposed are concealed. A semblance of new ideas will emerge without any true change in content. And that describes probably what you just told me, that they just flip and start talking about something else as if nothing happened.
Correct. Yeah. It's like, well, I'm not going to, let's just, let me bring up another point and let's argue about that. It's like, man, it's like trying to nail Jell-O to a tree.
Right. And all those points are not connected with one another. They're at least contradictory.
Mm-hmm.
It's not self-exclusive. So anyway, if all cultures are equal, why doesn't UNESCO organize International Cannibalism Week festivals? Right?
Right. We should have the human cookbook.
And why do those demanding equal pay for equal work never protest against equal pay for little or no work? And, of course, I mean the unions here.
Mm-hmm.
And, or, let's see, some select quotes. If a politician gets elected by the poor on a promise to eliminate poverty, wouldn't, for fulfilling his promise to destroy his voting base. Wouldn't he rather benefit from the growing numbers of poor people? Isn't this an obvious conflict of interest? And for those who doubt, I mean people like Al Sharpton here and many others like him.
No, it's a great point. If you elect me as a representative of the poor people, then expanding my constituency is certainly would be the order of the day.
Instead of lifting those people out of poverty by giving them opportunity to do it for themselves. Because the government cannot really lift anybody out of poverty.
That's
it can redistribute
point.
Other people's wealth, but it'll be consumed, and then they'll be hungry again the next day.
Yes, but ultimately there's two philosophies, and one of them is, as Michael Savage puts it, trickle-down poverty.
Trickle-down poverty, exactly. Well, I see it, there are two, I define these two philosophies as one is to make sure that people are taken care of, and another philosophy is to give people the freedom to take care of themselves.
I'm decidedly in the latter category. Folks, if you're just joining us, it's been our privilege to have Oleg Atbashian on with us on the Drive Time Happy Hour. If you want to get more of his writing, go to thepeoplescube.com or check out his book, Shakedown Socialism. Oleg, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks, Chip. Pleasure talking to you.
All right. Hopefully we will do it again real soon. Oleg Atbashian, we've got to take a quick break. We've got to get the bottom of the hour news. PC's coming back with a tech tip. More Drive Time, Happy Hour. Don't go anywhere, folks.